From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Porter Robinson. In the past year, this 18-year-old electro house prodigy has pushed his way to the top of the Beatport charts and into the hearts of enormous DJs like Tiësto and David Guetta. Robinson is currently on tour with other major producers in his field, Germany's Zedd and Skrillex. Sonny Moore recently signed Porter to his Owsla label, and we're expecting an EP to come out in the very near future. With major club bangers like Say My Name, I'm On Fire, and high-profile remixes of artists like Tim Berg's Seek Bromance, there's no telling where this young gentleman is headed, but it looks like doors are swinging wide open for him. Today's show is brought to you by Electric Forest Festival, presented by Insomniac and Madison House, as well as the String Cheese Incident Camp. Catch some of the biggest names in electronic music this weekend in Rockbury, Michigan. I'm talking Bass Nectar, Pretty Lights, Skrillex, Spongle, Bonobo, Paper Diamond, Layback Luke, Excision, Eskimo, Emancipator, Elliot Lip, Feed Me, Chitty Bang, The New Deal, Cascade, and Tiësto. This is all happening at the Double J Ranch, which has a water park, horseback riding, glow-in-the-dark disc golf. This place is going to be redonkulous. Make sure you catch up with the Unts crew at EFF. We'll be out in full force. Drop by, tell us what you think about what we're doing, how we can serve you better, and who you'd like us to work with in the future. We're very open-minded. Get tickets, find details, start building your schedule if you haven't already at electricforestfestival.com. We have a very thorough event preview up on theunts.com, and we'll be giving you the scoop all week. The very last slot of the festival belongs to our good friends, Jason and Travis of Eodo. Let's see what these guys have been up to before we get to the Porter Robinson interview. We have to dig into your past, not just because that's what I like to do, but because you seriously just exploded onto the scene, and no one really knows where you came from other than Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which is funny because you were just a twinkle in your papa's eye when that whole college rock era with Superchunk and Polvo and Ben Folds 5 was born and then flamed out there in Chapel Hill. So tell me how a youngster like yourself gets hip to electronic music there in North Carolina.
It happened in a really unconventional way, I think. I think your typical person who gets into electronic music ends up, going to clubs and going to raves and watching DJs play and getting into music that way. And I had a very sort of roundabout way of getting into the music that I think worked to my advantage in the end. I got into it through video game music. It kind of all started when I was about 12 years old. My brother brought home a copy of Dance Dance Revolution, which is a Japanese arcade dancing game.
Sure, very popular.
Yeah, and I loved the score for it. And I was super young. It was really cheesy, fun, stupid music. And so I started getting involved in some electronic music communities through the internet, and started trying to emulate the music I was hearing because I was just totally infatuated with it.
And did you have any instrumental training at all? Did you play any instruments at all? Or this was just purely you loved the music and so you were going to try and figure out how to produce it however you could?
Yeah, my dad bought me a piano when I was around that age, when I was first trying to learn how to make music, and I guess he must have thought it would help. Of course, he never anticipated it would go anywhere. But he got me this cute little $50 MIDI keyboard that I still use to this day just for fun and for nostalgia. And I self-taught piano, but I don't think that was super crucial in in my progress. I mean, it's learning how to make music and how to sequence and write melodies using a program and a sequencer. Kind of taught me how to play piano and taught me how chords work and what melodies are most interesting and stimulating. You know, there's a sort of duality to it.
So when you're a kid, you're trying to emulate your heroes. Who were your heroes if, you know, it's basically Japanese computer programmers halfway around the world? Did you start getting into more mainstream electronic music, or not until very recently?
It was within the last 3 or so years that I started really getting into mainstream electronic music. Early on, my hero was this guy named Onoken, and he didn't make one real stable style. He went all over the place, and he tagged all of his songs with these really silly genre names like eclectic jungle trance and stuff like that. And it gave me the impression that he probably wasn't too intimately familiar with the electronic music scene either.
And maybe didn't care.
Yeah, there's a certain level of irreverence there. But, you know, I think it's sort of inevitable that as you become involved in communities that have a, you know, central focus and electronic music being one of them, you're going to eventually start to get into some of the more mainstream styles and be exposed to those. And there's really something to be said for that. You know, I think there's something to be said for a thing's popularity being evidence of its merit, you know. So I started getting into cool, more mainstream stuff, and then I started trying to emulate that.
Do you remember your first exposures to, say, house or trance or this new sort of electro house movement? Do you remember when that started creeping under your radar?
So yeah, I wanted to learn more about electronic music genres, and I wanted to understand the styles because, you know, my untrained ears, I couldn't really distinguish them, and I didn't understand what defined them all. So I looked up on Google or something, Guide to Electronic Music, and I found this Flash website called Isker's Guide to Electronic Music.
Sure, it's a good cheat sheet.
Yeah, totally, and the, you know, the main advantage that provided to me, I think, was just hearing a lot of music, because on that Isker's Guide to Electronic Music website, there's a lot of clips from different styles being shown. So there would be like a section of like symphonic trance, and it would have 9 clips in that style. So that's how I kind of learned the basics of the genre and got exposed to more mainstream electronic music. And I think the next big step in incorporating it into more of the mainstream and more of what's popular and danceable and what's fun and really works was, I produced this more obscure style for pretty randomly a German market. And so this is kind of a long story. I got involved in this music forum called EuroAdrenaline.com. From there, I met somebody who taught me about this German style of hard dance music around 140 BPM, and that's what I produced for a while. And from there, I had got a couple records signed under a different name. But eventually, that style died out, so electro became the popular thing in Germany. And I tried to make a couple records for this guy who was making a compilation. He was like, hey, could you make a couple electro house songs for me so I could have some exclusive songs for my compilation? And I did it, and I was able to make it really quickly, and it worked really well, so I figured, you know, I should put some effort into this. If I can make acceptable electro music in hours, I wonder if it sounds like I really pushed it, if I put everything into it and really worked hard. And that was when I made my first real hit, I think, Say My Name.
Before we get into that, I wonder, so first of all, this is a couple of years ago now. So you're on this German label, and you're making this very, very niche, very specific type of music. And you're what, 15, 16 years old?
Yeah, I was 15.
When did you even play out? Had you even played a show at that point?
No, I didn't play a show until this year. So the only people who could really tour in that style were Germans themselves. Maybe I could have gotten like a residency in some German club, but that's just kind of a weird thing to aspire to. I wouldn't say I really had a higher goal than that. It just, there was more in store for me. And I don't know, I didn't know to try and pursue that path. And, you know, my goal a year ago was to keep making electronic music on the side and go to college, and that's totally changed now.
Thank you.
Robinson right here on the UNS podcast.
So yeah, let's jump in then with the Say My Name, I guess, saga and figure out how you got from that single being picked up to obviously the phenomenal success that it's achieving now.
We put it out on Beatport. My friend had just gotten his label confirmed to put stuff out through Beatport, which is an amazing medium that I could talk about forever. But, you know, my original goal was to get into the Beatport Electro House Top 100 because I always was browsing those. I was always reading them, and all the music in there just impressed me so much. So I wanted to, have my slice of that. So I asked my friends to buy the song, and I asked my fans of my older project to support me and post it on some forums, and sent the song to a few of my favorite musicians some of my favorite electro musicians who happened to hear it. And so it ended up not only getting to the top 100, it went to number one on the electro charts and to number 12 on the overall charts, which was vastly beyond whatever I had originally anticipated.
And huge, just a great honor.
Yeah, really. And it's just incredible exposure. A song that reaches number one, regardless of it, how good it is going to receive enormous amount of attention. And there are lots of DJs out there who will play a song, merely because of its success without assessing the merit of the thing. And I think those two things often coincide. I think often the most successful songs are the best, and there's something to be said for a song charting well. But just compounding the fact that Say My Name was a nice song and that it did well guarantees to a certain extent that a lot of people were going to hear it that should have heard it. So, as far as getting support from Tiesto and Guetta and those guys, hopefully they would have liked the song just as much that got under the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can understand that. Now, when did you notice things were starting to pick up for you? When did you get that glimmer of hope, like, fuck it, I'm not going to school tomorrow?
Well, that never quite happened because I just graduated high school last week. It was so gradual, but I guess the first time when I thought there could be a future for this, I was at the beach with my family, and we didn't have any internet at this beach house. This was last July, and so my brother and my mom had just gotten the Droid. It was like our first smartphones, and I remember like obsessively reading Beatport's charts on their phones every day and following its progress. And when they hit number one, and then I got a phone call from one of my favorite musicians, 40, from the band Pants Party, which is an electro act from San Francisco that I was just really, really in love with. When they gave me a call and wanted to just chat and talk about, management and music, that was like, my idols are reaching out to me now. This could go someplace.
Did your folks have any idea? Did your brother even know what you were doing? Were they like, oh, Porter and his silly video game music?
No, not at all. It's quite the opposite. They're really educated in electronic music. They're really involved, and they've been extremely supportive. Like, my brother right now is helping me coordinate something with I sampled a YouTube video for one of my recent songs, and my brother is friends with the guy who made the YouTube video, so he's trying to get him to get a Creative Commons license so I can use the sample. And my dad's an attorney, and he helped me out with a bunch of my contracts and is constantly, reminding me of, for example, like when I need to do interviews. And my family is really, really loving and supportive, and they've been down with my music long before it was even good. So
that's fantastic.
And they were never dismissive of it, which is great, because I know that there are a lot of musicians whose parents or whose immediate friends and family don't understand and don't make an effort to. But my dad can talk about Deadmau5 versus Wolfgang Gartner versus Dirty Loud. He's really educated. And so I have three brothers. One's like 10, the other's 12, and the other one's 21. And my 12-year-old brother is an aspiring DJ and producer too. He loves the music. So it's spread throughout my family. It's been really phenomenal. And I think if they had been dismissive of it, I think if they hadn't supported me and my dad hadn't helped me choose my management and use his wisdom to support me, I think the level of success that I would have attained, as meager as it may be right now, would be not even close. They've been awesome. I have nothing but praise for them.
So I wonder, since you start off as such a producer, do you ever get that sort of pendulum shift where you're thinking, like, some days I'd rather just kick it and make some beats, and other days you think, I don't care, I just want to get out there and move this crowd? I imagine, since this is really just your first year getting out and performing, you're still getting that high from being out there and watching the effect your music has on your fans.
Yeah, and I hope that a high never expires, because I mean, I watch Skrillex DJ all the time, and he's so not jaded. He has a great time every night. He loves doing it. He loves being up there. He loves the fans, and he loves the energy. And, you know, I still get a huge rush out of it. I tend to be pretty self-critical about my performances, so whether or not I enjoy myself often has to do with how well I feel I did. And I think, you know, more and more I come out of my performances feeling confident and refreshed and feeling like I was able to sort of inflict a good time on those people. so, you know, more and more DJing has become a super enjoyable act that I look forward to. Like, I'm on this bus tour right now with Skrillex and Zedd, and we have like 20-something shows and within 20-something days. And today's one of our off days, which means I will have a chance to make music. But, you know, it's also kind of a bummer because I spend the whole day looking forward to playing, and when I'm done playing, I want to go back on. I love it. It's perfect.
Porter Robinson is on tour now with Skrillex. Let's listen to a track he did with 12th Planet.
It gets me nervous.
Father Zedd from Skrillex and 12th Planet. You can catch them both this weekend at Electric Forest Festival. Let's listen to a cut from next week's guest, Zugma. Pillow from Zugma right here on the Yuns podcast. You can download their album Recreational Vehicles for free from their website, zugma.net. Catch them next week on the program. They'll be at Camp Bisco on July 7th.
So let's talk about this tour then. How have you or how do you plan to avoid the inevitable comparisons to either Zedd or Skrillex when you're playing for people who may have never seen you before?
I think my DJ set is very different from both of theirs, and I've made an active effort to distinguish myself. And some of those ways have been, well, some of them has to do with what they do. So Skrillex plays mostly dubstep. He plays a really eclectic selection. He plays some jungle shit. He plays moombahtone, electro, dubstep, drumstep, drum and bass. He's all over the place in a really awesome way. And Zedd plays a lot of pop remixes because that's what he's known for. He makes a lot of remixes of pop artists like Lady Gaga and so on and so forth. And, you know, I play after Zedd on this tour every day. And I play a little bit more sort of edgy, esoteric electronic music stuff. And I try to do some mashups as well. So I think the ultimate goal for my DJ set is to make the hardcore EDM fan who listens to Beatport and knows every song and follows all the releases to just like go absolutely crazy with recognition for all these semi-obscure songs that electronic music fans love. I'd rather excite people by playing them a song that they've heard before and they can't quite place what it is, giving them that very subtle recognition than to play, a hyper-recognizable anthem. But I'm also known to do some of that, too. I love to play this one remix of One More Time by Daft Punk, and I'm known to drop some dead mouse every once in a while. But, you know, the direction I'm in is always shifting, and as long as it's distinct from those who I'm touring with, and as long as it's still fun and energetic and exciting, then I'm happy with it.
Oh, you'd make me lose my shit if I was listening to you. I'd be sitting there like, no, wait, I've heard this. I got this in an email the other day. Where have I heard this? Oh, and then I'd miss the next three songs.
Yeah, I'd love for you to hear this at some time because I think people who are involved in the electronic music community and some of the, you know, social journalism, I do get excited by it because they are familiar with a lot of the releases and it's stuff that they wouldn't expect to hear me play live.
Sure. It seems like there's a free flow and exchange going on in this tour. Are you picking up any tips or sounds or ideas for new material from either Zedd or Skrillex?
I think we all mutually influence one another, but I think we also have our direction set in mind. And, you know, we're all doing hyper-detailed, energetic electronic music, but in a way, our music is all also very distinct in sort of the attitude and tone that we approach the music with. So any day of the week, I would influence Zedd and Skrillex in my influences. But, you know, and we're constantly talking about music and picking one another's brains. So, I mean, that's an ongoing process that I'm sure will happen on this tour. But, you know, we're careful to do our own thing.
Yeah. So you have a ton of singles and remixes with more material forthcoming. Is there pressure for you to jump onto a major label and put out an album? Where do you want to go with your stuff? You seem like you're a pretty savvy guy and you've got a lot of people who have your interests in mind. I imagine you want to maintain pure creative control over everything you put out there.
Yeah, I would almost never be willing to forego creative control for very much. You know, I mean, I think it would take quite a bit for me to not do what I love. What I'm going to be doing in the coming months is I'm going to be releasing an EP on Skrillex's record label called Ausla. And this EP is very, very much me doing my thing. And it's still, I would say tonally and attitudinally, it resembles my old music a lot because it's high energy. It's danceable, it's exciting, it's drop-oriented. But there's less four-on-the-floor electro house 128 BPM stuff. I've done so much of that, and you know, there will be a couple ones like that on this coming EP, but the majority of the music that is forthcoming is, you know, playing around with some different styles. Because, and I think in order for me to make the best music I can, I need to stay stimulated, and I worry about my releases flowing together and becoming indistinguishable and sounding samey. I've done a lot of songs that have where the climax is four beats of high energy bass notes, like one bass note or one really high energy stab, and then the next four beats are like little details and cuts, and I'm all about that. But I've kind of become addicted to that structure, so I've had to reject it with this newest EP. I really want it to stay fresh, and so I think this next one is going to be very exciting. I'm totally in love with it.
I'm glad that you are so focused and pay so much attention to detail. and you're willing to maybe sort of push yourself and not let yourself do anything easy. I wonder, have you sort of mapped out your future plans? Do you plan to sort of maybe break out of dance music for a label or two and get into other areas of the industry? Maybe you want to produce an album for some, or maybe you want to make, you know, chill out music or something that's not dance oriented. I imagine you're getting a ton of offers, and it seems like, you know, you want to keep yourself moving in new directions and staying fresh.
Well, I mean, I think right now the most avenue that electronic music producers are exploring is pop music, and that's also very much dance oriented in 2011. It's all house clubby stuff. So for me, that wouldn't be too experimental. I want to keep my stuff dance-oriented at the end of the day. That is what's most exciting to me. I'm addicted to high-energy, danceable, exciting music. That is totally what it's about. So I feel that no matter what style I explore, it's going to stay exciting. It's going to stay fun. And I would never want to go so experimental that I lose focus of what it is that originally got people on board with my music and what was originally exciting to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we want you to do well. We wish you a ton of luck with your current tour. Porter Robinson, thanks so much for being on the Yuns podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. It was a good interview.
That's going to do it for this week's episode. We're going out with Porter Robinson's remix of friend of the show Avicii, Tim Bergling's Seek Romance. You can catch Porter Robinson through the plains and into the northern side of the Midwest this week and next. You can catch him and Skrillex and Zedd on that tour. And they'll also all be at Electric Forest Festival in Rothbury, Michigan this weekend. And Porter Robinson will be going out on tour with Tiësto at a bunch of colleges in the fall. Good things for him. Coming up next week on the program, it's Southern Live Tronica X Zugma. I'll be talking with Preston Buteau and drummer Matt Harris about the band's inception, their album Recreational Vehicles, which is available for free on their website, as well as how they've been blowing up on tour this year. Catch them at a number of summer festivals, including the Big Up, Rootwire, Bear Creek, and Camp Bisco 10, here in a little more than a week. Let's get an update of contests from theunts.com. You can win a month-long pass to Wobble Wednesdays at the Wonder Bar outside of Boston from the Brain Trust. We've got Glitch Mob and Cut Copy tickets in Pittsburgh, and you can still win festival passes for Underground Sound, Liberate, and North Coast Music Festival, among others. Just go to theunts.com, sign up, click on contests, and enter to win. It couldn't be any easier, trust me. Please visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Yuns podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's anand@theunts.com. Catch you next week.